Thank you, Madam Co-Chairperson. And let me begin by saying it is an honor to be able to participate in this important and timely conversation. In my remarks today, I want to say a few words about what socioeconomic empowerment means and why it is so crucially important. I'm then going to discuss both the relevance of equality of treatment and equality of opportunity in being able to achieve this goal. I want to emphasize that all such approaches need to be aware of intersectionalities in order to be effective. And in that regard, I'm going to focus my comments on the circumstances of youth and also of refugees. My comments draw upon the recent recommendations by the OSCE-HCNM on the social and economic participation of minorities. And indeed, I would recommend this as essential reading to everybody here. So first of all, what do we mean by socioeconomic empowerment? The concept draws our attention to the fundamental importance for persons belonging to minorities to be able to access the resources and indeed the opportunities that will enable them to improve their standards of living, to be able to increase their well-being, to be able to have that human dignity to which we are all entitled, and to do that not only for themselves, but also for their families and by extension, their communities. This is a fundamental part of human and minority rights. It is integral to the integration of diverse societies. It is absolutely essential for the achievement of social cohesion, and it is an important aspect of conflict prevention. In order to be able to achieve this goal, we need to give due regard both to equality of treatment and to equality of opportunity. Equality of treatment, of course, relies upon comprehensive anti-discrimination legislation, and this has obviously already been emphasized by several speakers today. Such a comprehensive anti-discrimination system should recognize a broad range of protected characteristics, and indeed should have clear avenues of redress available. That is a fundamental starting point, but it is not sufficient. We also need to be thinking about equality of opportunity. And it is in this context that positive measures become very important. It is essential in this regard also to involve minorities directly within conversations around what such suitable action measures will consist in. It is vital, therefore, that all state actors are making sure they are speaking with and not for persons belonging to minorities to take these conversations to the regions where minorities can be found and to create avenues for them to be able to engage in identifying what it is that they require in order to be able to have full social and economic participation. Intersectionality is a vital part of all of this, and again, this has been remarked upon. It is a foundational principle that where identities come together in ways that magnify discrimination and marginalization, we need to recognize that. This applies, of course, to gender, and we've talked a lot already in the first session about the experience of women and girls. Equally, of course, it applies to young people and it applies to refugees, among others. Young people who are from minority backgrounds often experience problems in attaining employment. This is to do with difficulties they have in accessing education and training. This may be the result of inability to access it in a language that they can understand. Equally, of course, they may often fail to have learning differences recognized or have them misrecognized inappropriately, which acts as a problem that prevents them from fully engaging with educational systems. They also, of course, may lack access to role models and indeed to social capital. Similar problems are experienced, of course, by persons belonging to minorities who are refugees. And there is a strong correlation here between those who experience discrimination and exclusion because they are minorities and at an extreme, of course, when that takes form of violence, These are more likely then to trigger movements across borders. And then in transit and destination states, they also experience difficulties in being able to demonstrate identity documents, proof of residence, being able to have skills recognized, being able to access education, or indeed information about those social welfare benefits that they are entitled to. My recommendations that I would like to flag today include the following key points. First, the absolute importance of states adopting comprehensive strategies for the education of minorities. I note, by the way, this was already recognized as a recommendation at the very first forum in 2007, and it remains a priority action point. Equally, it's fundamentally important to involve young people in our conversations. Here I think we can learn much from the UN Youth 2030 strategy, which emphasizes the importance of young people being able to speak as well with officers at the UN. Obviously, the Minority Voluntary Fund becomes crucial here, and I would add my voice to those who are pushing towards it. And indeed, the importance of being able to maintain the regional forums and also to make creative use of digital technologies, being mindful of the digital divide, to open up direct access with young people. Equally, I would urge all states to take action against hate speech directed at refugees and migrants. This is obviously also a key source of furthering discrimination and exclusion, and it should be dealt with as a priority in order to ensure that the dignity of such persons is recognized. Equally, also, I would flag the importance of ensuring that information regarding both welfare policies and access to education, training, and employment is available in a wide variety of languages so that it can be understood by persons from minority backgrounds who are refugees.